from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Here's the 2-0, and it's swung on, hit to right by Ballesteros, deep. That is way back, and that is gone. Off the roof of the bandbox, a no-doubter for Moises Ballesteros. Speaking of Cubs prospects, he's gone deep for the second time in 18 games now as an Iowa Cub.
It is Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Aw, Silk Sonic right there? Come on, man. Just made my morning that much better. Sean Sears, it's Matt Spiegel here with you. Let's talk about exceptional young talent in baseball. And if I was talking about exceptional young talent in baseball media, then I might be talking about R.M. Layton, who joins us from Just Baseball right now on the Circus Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. But I'm talking about exceptional young talent who actually play the game. No offense, R.M., but thank you so much for the time. Good morning. How are you?
No, I'll take that intro every single day of the week. Thank you so much, and appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, man. So you have an affinity for Moises Ballesteros, the young Cubs catcher now raking at AAA. Tell Cub fans what you think of him, and does it preclude them, should it preclude them from looking for a catcher, potentially even here at the deadline? Bob Nightingale wrote today that Danny Jansen of the Blue Jays is in the Cubs' sights.
You know, it's funny. I love the bat so much because it's an incredible operation. I mean, there's just not a lot of things that people can do in the box that I think Ballesteros can do. Like, he makes it look so easy, despite not really looking like the athlete that you would expect. But he moves so well. He has such a good control of the bat. He has sneaky power, and I don't even think it's sneaky anymore. He can really run into him, and we saw him crush some yesterday, on the stage when they were doing the skills competition. But, I mean, this is a really special bat, but the question is, can he develop behind the dish? I think he's got some room for improvement there, so I think you still look to try to upgrade behind the dish. I think that's still something that you have to kind of operate under the assumption that you still don't have a surefire catcher there. I think what makes Ballesteros so fun is that he is really hard to punch out. He balances hit and power as well as any young hitter in the upper minors. He's so advanced on that side of things, but I still think he's got a long way to go defensively behind the dish.
All right, so you referenced what you were able to see yesterday. Tell people what you saw with Futures Game and Skills Competition as well.
I love the idea of the Skills Competition. I'm hoping that they adjust that a little bit more in the future so we don't have some of the best power hitters in the minor leagues bunting so much, but they did have that free swinging opportunity and kind of a mini home run derby at the end, which was a blast. Of course, the Futures Game is always awesome. Offense is going to be hard to find, just like the All-Star Game, because you have some of the best arms going in one inning spurts, just overwhelming hitters. But it's just such a fun display of talent across the board, and so many young, just, I think, toolsy, but also polished players. We saw 17 and 18-year-olds in that game. Ethan Salas, who's 17 years older, by the time he was already playing high A, now 18 and looking comfortable behind the dish. You had Sebastian Walcott, who's 18 years old, and playing shortstop in that game. So just so much talent, but I love that they extended it a little bit more with these skills competitions, and we got an opportunity to see what these guys can do. And Ballesteros in particular, one of the things was just hitting directionally. Can you go the other way? Can you go to center? Can you go to the pole side? And that's just something that he puts on display in batting practice all the time. The ability to just control the barrel is something that is innate for him and really hard to learn.
Quickie on Ballesteros, where would he play? Little first base? Are they using him? Where would you put him?
That's the challenge with him. I think if it weren't for that question, I think he's a consensus one of the better young prospects in baseball, consensus top 100 guy, and probably even higher than that. But being shorter in stature and not the most mobile, it kind of limits him to this catcher or DH situation. So there's a lot more, I think, emphasis on him developing there behind the dish, because if not, I think you really got to look at a DH role because of the lack of stature and the lack of mobility.
So futures game, what did you think of Noah Schultz throwing, 96, 97 with a lot of life on it? He's got a slider. This is the 6'9" lefty in the White Sox system.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing because the thing that stands out with him is the fact that he throws strikes as well as anybody that you'll see in low A and high A. Forget a 6'9" lefty. Usually those are pitchers that are always searching to try to find strikes and searching for the strike zone. And this was the first time where I really saw Schultz kind of battling his command. I don't think it's a big deal because he's not very used to coming out of the bullpen. But, I mean, this is somebody that had gone 6 consecutive outings without walking anybody and has only walked more than 2 batters, I think, once this entire season. It's amazing the way that he can fill up the zone with a fastball, as you mentioned, with that run, and then a slider that he's been landing for a strike at a 71% clip this year, which is absurd considering how much movement it has. We saw that, I think, in that game, and you could see the stuff, but it just seemed like he was a little uncomfortable coming out of the pen there and was battling himself command-wise a bit. Not too worried about that. I'll take the sample size of 14 outings this year where he's only walking opponents at a 5% clip. Unheard of for a 6'9 high school lefty.
Wow. Any other takeaway from the futures game for you in terms of a player that you saw that you absolutely love before we get to the draft?
Bubba Chandler's fastball, I got a chance to see it a little while ago, but just again, you get that viewpoint of the Pirates prospect here, who was a football recruit. He could have gone to Clemson to play quarterback. He was hitting a little bit in the early parts of his professional career. Like, this guy can do everything. And you really see the athleticism and the arm speed on the mound. It's 97 to 98, but the characteristics are crazy. He just really spins it, and it just takes off out of his hand. So that fastball was really fun to watch. And then Max Clark of the Tigers just tools across the board, spraying the ball all over, can absolutely fly, rocket for an arm. It's really a 5-tool profile there, and you can see why the Tigers were so excited to grab him. And I know people were surprised to see him go ahead of Wyatt Langford, but I think he's starting to show, you know, why the Tigers were so excited about him.
RM Layton of Just Baseball Media. You can find him on X at RMLayton8. And we will ask about some prospects that might be available in trade coming up in a little bit. But let's talk about this draft. What is the quality and the quantity in this particular draft from the baseball team's perspectives? Like, are they more excited than usual about this batch or not?
I would say not. And, you know, I haven't been doing this nearly as long as some of the incredible people in this industry. But I could say it's the lightest draft I can remember. And I know, again, people that have been doing this longer than me have kind of shared the same sentiments. But, you know, it's a unique one because at the top, I think there's a lot of really safe, and that's a very relative word when it comes to baseball drafting, but safe bats, you know, but also a lot of players that don't give you a lot of positional value. So you're looking at second base profiles or corner outfield or first base. So it's really come down to diving into the offensive profiles. And then it doesn't help when, I don't know what they did in college baseball this year, but exit velocities were up more than 2 miles per hour across the board. We saw home runs way off the charts this year. So it's a tough year to assess. And it is a very thin class, I think, relative to a lot of years. The feedback I keep getting is a stark drop off after the top 10.
Okay. What are you thinking for the White Sox at 5 in this draft?
They are in this kind of wait and see mode, right? Because I think there's so many contingencies in this top 5 where we still don't know who's going number 1. Bazana seems to be the favorite, but J.J. Weatherholt is also a very likely option here. And this is a financially driven decision as well here. So we're kind of waiting for that. Then the domino from there can create a myriad of things, because at 2, it sounds like Condon would be the guy, but you never know what's going to happen there. The Rockies love to go with an arm, but if Condon is somehow there, then that creates a different domino effect, and another bat is off the board. So I think for the White Sox, you got to have to kind of wait and see how it shakes out. You're hoping that one of those top bats fall to you, but I think at the very worst, and I think the worst case scenario is a runoff of 4 bats, considering, you know, the White Sox probably would prefer that, I would imagine. But okay, runoff of 4 bats, you get the best arm in the class, whether you think that's Hagen Smith or Chase Burns. Sounds like they think it's Burns. Great. you've got the best arm in the class then. So I think it's a win-win either way, and that's not even including the fact that you might be able to go under slot with one of the top high school guys there in a Connor Griffin, who's toolsy as could be, and then a Bryce Rayner, who also is very toolsy and has a great chance to stick it short. They're going to have options there, even in the quote-unquote worst-case scenario where all four college bats rattle off. But I think for them, I would love to have a Jack Caglione there. I think that's a guy that's volatile, but you got to love the upside or any of the other
college
guys.
It's a first base bat, though, man. Here in Andrew Vaughn town, we don't love the idea of a first base bat with a top five pick.
I know, and I keep seeing those White Sox reactions to that. My counterpoint would be, have you ever seen Andrew Vaughn, even with metal, I think you could give him a BESR badge. You ever see Andrew Vaughn hit a ball 120-plus miles per hour?
No, he did not. But we also see Spencer Torkelson. Is he still in the minors for the Tigers? So, you know.
That's a valid counterpoint as well. So, you know, and that's the tough spot here, because I do think offensively Caglione has as much upside as anybody. But, you know, as I mentioned right off the bat, like, relative is the word when it comes to safe, because Torque was supposed to be the safest of all.
Yes.
So there is that positional aspect, which could pivot them to the high school guys, because Connor Griffin can play a potential gold glove caliber center field or a solid shortstop by all accounts. And then Bryce Rayner has come a long way defensively. Shortstop looks really good there. And of course, both boast plenty of offensive upside. So how risk averse is Chris Getz, or how willing is he to roll the dice here on a high school guy? I think financially that'll be a big part of it, but yeah, I know White Sox fans seem to be a little bit traumatized from the first base only profile.
You know, I wonder, Aram, if there's any dudes in this draft, and I'm not necessarily even interested in the specifics of it, of the names, but like guys to get from the draft to the majors quickly. Because I remember Brandon Finnegan did it for the Royals back in 2014. I know there's some position players. Zach Nito and Nolan Chanuel are guys who've gotten there fast. And Nico Horner got there fast out of necessity for the Cubs a few years back. I'll tell you what has spoiled me. You know what sports draft has spoiled me? I'll tell you right now. It's the WNBA, man. Like, it literally felt like 2 weeks after the Final Four, I saw Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese get drafted, and 2 weeks later, I see them playing, and the level of connectivity that brings to the sport is insane. I know it's not a fair comp, you know what I mean? But it's like...
Of course.
But my goodness, I feel spoiled by that draft experience, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that has consistently been the biggest hurdle for Major League Baseball in making this draft relevant. And of course, it's relevant because every very good player outside of the international side, too. Like, if you're a stateside here, you've got to be drafted, usually, unless you're, an incredible story. So, of course, it's relevant, but it seems like, oh, okay, we got to wait and see. You know, we'll see this guy in 4 or 5 years. I do think that's changing a lot because of how good college baseball is. I mean, we're talking about Chase Burns here. The biggest question with him is, will the fastball translate because it got hit so hard at times in college? There was 100, and guys in college had an OPS over 900 against it. Like, that's how far we've come, I think, offensively here in college baseball. And in pitching-wise, too, it's a testament to both. So I think that's why we're seeing the Wyatt Langfords fly up the ranks so quickly. We're seeing, a lot of these other guys the last couple of years. Dylan Cruz already in AAA. That's definitely something that stands out to me. And then on the pitching side, more than ever, I think you're going to see these guys continue to be fast-tracked. One, because, if you're polished in college, no need to waste bullets in the minors. And I look at a Hagen Smith. I think that's a guy that could fly right up. And you remember what the White Sox did with Crochet. Like, if they wanted to do that with Hagen Smith, if a team wanted to do that, his fastball slider combination, I think, plays in a bullpen right away. Obviously, you want to develop him as a pitcher, but as a starting pitcher. But I do think that's something that will work well. And then I look at J.J. Weatherholt. And that is a guy with the right scenario here that could fall to the White Sox. I think that would be a dream. If he doesn't go one, he could kind of slide down there based on, what it sounds like some of these other teams would do. Could be fast-tracked as well with his balance of hit, power, and approach. I would love to see Weatherholt, if I'm a White Sox fan, slide there, because that's a guy that has a chance to play short a little bit more than some of the other guys, but has the makings to fly through the minor leagues.
So talking to R.M. Layton from Just Baseball, and his latest mock draft is up over at Just Baseball. But, you know, there was a note in Bob Nightingale's column today that the White Sox, if they were going to trade with the Yankees, that they were insisting on Yankees prize prospect Spencer Jones in a deal for Garrett Crochet. What would you think of that potential return or part of that package for Garrett Crochet if Spencer Jones is a grab?
It's an upside play for sure. I mean, that's a guy that I've liked a lot and have been disappointed in, to be honest. You know, it's early in his professional career, but at the end of the day, like, the way he started in spring training, even in this futures game, you know, there were some spots where he did end up, you know, lining one the other way, but there's some times where he just looks very overwhelmed at the plate. It's long. He's 6'7". You know, there's a lot of things working against him to consistently make contact, but at the same time, he has massive power. He flies. He can play center field. Like, there is so much there that is exciting. But I think if you're trading a Crochet, you've got to get big league pieces back. And there's a chance that Spencer Jones could be an all-star piece for you, but there's also a chance that he doesn't hit enough, to be able to carry his weight at the big league level. So I would want Jones in that deal without a doubt, but I don't think that should mean that you're not getting a couple other high-impact pieces as well. But it could be a good opportunity there where you might be buying a little bit lower on a Spencer Jones, considering how much he struck out this year, and maybe a change of scenery helps him. But my concern there is the Yankees have done a really good job of getting their guys right when they have swing and miss issues and developing hitting in that perspective. Mm-hmm. Jason Dominguez is a recent, you know, really strong example of that. You're seeing what Ben Rice is now doing up there at the big league level. Austin Wells has had a lot of success. They have done a great job of getting their guys right, and it makes me a little concerned that Spencer Jones is still floundering the way that he is from a contact perspective, considering their track record of late of, you know, being able to get guys mechanically, you know, right to be able to make more contact.
What is the package that makes sense for Crochet? Like, are we talking about two top hundreds and a 4A guy who you can slot in as a position player and try to find something and then a lottery pick after that, a scratch off lottery card of a young pitcher thrown in? Like, what have you put a package together, you and Jack?
We've tried, but it is hard, because Crochet, I think, is somewhat of an unprecedented trade piece here, between the control, between the dominance, but then also with the fact that he has already eclipsed a career high in innings, and you just wonder, you know, how that holds up. Because if you're trading for Crochet this year, it's of course a long-term play, but it's also a play of, hey, we want to win right now. We want him to pitch into the postseason for us and hopefully deep into, you know, October. So that's the unique spot here. If you're trading for a Crochet, are you willing to give up a ton and roll the dice on the fact that he is totally pushing, you know, the limits of what we've seen? But it might not be his limits. Nobody knows. And it seems like he's handling it just fine. To answer the question, though, I think that's just something you got to sign up and deal with and take that risk. And I think a lot of teams are going to be willing to give up a lot to get him because of what he's able to do. The fact that Lizardo is off the market now with injury, like, he is clearly the best piece there. I think two top 100s is a starting point, but I think you could justify getting a third in there or several top 10 pieces to complement. Like, I do think that this is one of the bigger trade packages you've seen in a while, if he does get moved. One, because the White Sox do have that, you know, that leverage there where, I mean, they could just taper down his innings in the back half, try to preserve his health, and then either move him in the offseason or move him next year if they wanted to. I think that's risky, obviously, with the way pitchers are unfortunately struggling to stay on the field, but they do technically have that leverage. They don't have to move him. And I think for that reason, you also have an A.J. Preller who, you know, doesn't care about prospects at this point, especially. He's going to come in hot, man, and I think teams are going to have to match that. So I think it's going to be one of the larger packages we've seen, and you know, I think it'll dwarf to a degree that C steal.
In a related story, Yoshinobu Yamamoto has been moved to the 60-day injured list for the Dodgers. Mm. He won't even be available till August 16th at the earliest. Dustin May announced he's having another surgery, so he's done. So, boy, The Dodgers are in need. All right, last thing, Aram, is you've been generous with your time. If you were the Cubs and you do end up buying, who would you not give up among their top 100 prospects?
That is a great question.
Because there's, you know, there people have fallen in love with Owen Casey and Matt Shaw and Cade Horton and Kevin Alcantara. A lot of people don't know a ton about Jefferson Rojas. So of those guys, who would you not give up in a trade?
If I had to pick one, it'd probably be Owen Casey at this point. I've always been a huge Owen Casey fan, and I think it's one of those situations where you almost forget that he's been the youngest, you know, one of the youngest players at each stop, and has been aggressively pushed. And he's not typically the type of profile that you aggressively push, right? Like massive power. The question was, is he going to make enough contact? He's really playing the outfield consistently for the first time ever in his baseball career. Once he went, you know, to the professional ranks, he had not really played that a ton. And handling all of that with grace and being above average hitter at every single stop is pretty impressive. And we're seeing him do it now in AAA. And I had a chance to talk to him, and he said this was the biggest adjustment he has made in his professional career, is just handling this more advanced pitching. And that looks like, you know, a 117 WRC plus and plenty of just on base skills overall throughout the year, and a guy that actually can motor too. I love Matt Shaw. You know, I think he's been a little bit of a disappointment, but he's come on stronger as the year has progressed. And it's a guy I'd rather not trade. But at the end of the day, Owen Casey's one that I think you could end up losing sleep over, because if it all works out for him, he's hitting 30-plus. He's getting on base a ton. And the speed all of a sudden could start to translate more into his game. So that's the one guy that I'd be the most nervous parting with if I'm trying to hold on to anybody.
He is Aram Layton. Enjoy the draft, sir, and thanks for the great coverage and the time. Appreciate you.
Thanks so much for having me, always.
You got it. That's Aram Layton from Just Baseball. It is Matt Spiegler with you on 670 The Score. We have a lineup for the Cubs and the Cardinals in the finale of the first half of the season. We will get that to you when we come back. And we've got a few other things. Bruce Levine was singing. That's noteworthy. And gives me an opportunity to talk about a Cubs-related song. We have an emerging ace trying to get better in a way that so many pitchers do as well. Lots to come here before we get to Jed Hoyer in a chunk at the top of the hour on Hit and Run on the Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Hey, bada 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 bada, so we bada. Hey, bada 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 bada, so we bada. Kennedy, 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 so we bada.
On 670 The Score.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago, and yes, it does appear that the Cubs are on their way again, aren't they? Welcome back inside the clubhouse right here on 670 The Score and your free Odyssey app, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios.
They got the hustle. Yeah. They got the muscle. Yeah. The Chicago Cubs are on their way.
I wonder whose idea it was to play that coming in. That's Bruce Levine. I'm David Hall. We're here till 11 o'clock talking baseball.
Hell yeah, Bruce. Never stop. Bruce can sing, man. Did you hear that?
Yeah. They got the muscle. Yeah. The Chicago Cubs are on their way.
That is outstanding melodic execution by Bruce Levine yesterday on Inside the Clubhouse. I did not know. Bruce, a big music guy, loves rock and roll. But I mean, the singing chops are there. I mean, what am I doing if not utilizing the vocal stylings of Bruce Levine on a future parody song for Parkins and Spiegel? Or perhaps for Hit and Run? How about a little crossover? How about a little collab between Inside the Clubhouse and Hit and Run?
Inside the Hit and Run.
Yeah.
Too many words?
Hit and Clubhouse. I don't know. Yeah, no, we're working on it. But there's got to be there's got to be room for that. And it lets me, Matt Spiegel, here with you on Hit and Run on a Sunday morning, talk to you about Hey, Hey, Holy Mackerel, which is an incredible bit of Cubs lore, written in, I believe it's 1970, or it might have been, I think it was 69, but it was, Hey, Hey is Jack Brickhouse, obviously, Holy Mackerel is Vince Lloyd, And Lou Boudreau used to say, apparently, no doubt about it, when somebody from the Cubs hit a home run. And so the lyrics were written by somebody named I.C. Hogg, and I don't know who that is, I.C.H.A.A.G., I.C. Hagg. I don't know, it sounded weird when I said
this. This isn't a Simpsons gag or something?
I don't know. But the music was written by Johnny Frigo. Anybody know Johnny Frigo? Google him, folks. A legendary Chicago musician. Johnny Frigo was a brilliant violinist, played violin with Roy Rogers on the old Roy Rogers show. And Johnny Frigo, an incredible jazz violinist, among other things, he and his buddy, his partner, Joe Vito, Chicago musical royalty for decades. They used to have a golf outing, Joe Frigo and Johnny Vito. Or Johnny Frigo and Joe Vito used to have a golf outing. And then after the golf outing, everyone would gather to tell stories, eat food, and play music. And they would invite incredible musicians. And I know this because I was lucky enough to be invited once. I was in my 20s and I was at their golf outing. I sang with Johnny Frigo. I did a couple of gigs with Johnny Frigo. Such good stories, that dude. There's one story I would love to tell you about Roy Rogers and his horse Trigger that I cannot tell you. If you see me out and about, say, Spiegel, what was the story about Johnny Frigo and Trigger? And I will tell you, but I won't do it on the air. And his son, Derek Frigo, was in the band Enough is Enough, which was a big Chicago rock and roll thing. Anyway, I think Hey Hey Holy Mackerel is a really cool bit of Chicago ephemera. And I hear Bruce Levine sing it.
They got the muscle. The Chicago Cubs are on their way.
And it makes me want to talk about Hey Hey Holy Mackerel and my good fortune to know and play music with Johnny Frigo. Anyway, thanks for listening and surviving that segment. If you're like, what the hell is he talking about? What is that song? Why is Spiegel doing this? What the hell is going on? But anyway, that's a really cool bit of Chicago ephemera and Cubs lore. I have a lineup for you for the Cubs and the Cardinals today. Nico Horner leads off yet again, 10-game hit streak for Nico. Michael Busch with an 837 OPS. Absolutely killing it is Michael Busch. And playing really good defense at first base, too. Good for him. That dude. So it's Horner, Busch, Suzuki, and Happ. Christopher Morel continues to bat fifth. Dansby Swanson up to six in the lineup. Miles Mastroboni at seven playing third base. His defense has really been valuable there. He made a couple nice plays last night as well. Tomas Nito is the catcher. And Pete Crow Armstrong in center field, that behind Jameson Taillon. Cliff Floyd on the Marquee Sports Network was talking about Christopher Morel after the game last night. And he had this to say about Chris.
Yeah, I'm not here to pounce on him. No, really not. I think he's better. I think he knows he's better than the average he's putting up. And you're right, Cole. You're right about just the game and the game of adjustments and understanding situations. I mean, he has a one-dimensional swing. And his swing is geared to hit the ball at the ballpark. His gear is for slug. And if you can live with the strikeouts, and I'm talking about not just him, but the team can live with the strikeouts, then Morel will be in his lineup. But when you think about what he's doing defensively, and not that he's played bad at third defensively, but when you think about what's going on in that situation over at third, he's not playing there consistently. And you're starting to strike out in key situations. Mm. I'm not saying he's headed to Iowa. I'm not saying he's going to be demoted. What I'm saying is, if he doesn't make the adjustment sooner than later, I mean, it's just obvious. The game doesn't give you anything. Sure. You have to earn it every single day. That's what the big league is all about. And I'm hoping that he realizes where he should be living, and that's right center. It's hard to stay there because you believe in your mind that the pitch is coming, and you see, you know what, you're gearing up to hit it. But every take and every approach of his at-bats is geared to do one thing. And that's hit the ball at the ballpark to left field. And these pitches at the big level are not going to give you that pitch consistently every single time. They'll make mistakes, hence why he has the homers he has.
Absolutely.
Man, that's great stuff from Cliff, who's been really, really good all season long. And I'm glad that he's working so much and they've got some consistency over there, man. It has helped that show tremendously, in my opinion. But
You know, it's some interesting, a really good little bit of context there, and it ties into some conversation we had in the first segment of the show this morning at 9 o'clock. Every pitch he takes, every count he gets to, is geared toward hitting the ball out of the ballpark to left field. And the pitchers are not going to give you a pitch you can do that with. That is really well said from a hitter's perspective and gives me, and hopefully you, further understanding. Because if you're Kyle Gibson and you're pitching to Morel in the fourth with the bases loaded, and he's gotten himself ahead in the count at 2-1, you now as a pitcher, based on what Cliff just said, you now as a pitcher know that he's still looking to hit the ball out of the ballpark to left. So you give him a pitch you can't do that with. You give him a sweeping slider on the outside part of the plate that looks like, for a second, it might be a fastball that he can hit out, or a slider that's going to hang and sit there so he can hit it out. But instead, you give him one that ends up outside, and so he tries to hit it out of the ballpark, and of course he can't. So that makes all the sense in the world, the way that Cliff discussed it right there. It's frustrating, it's unfortunate, but still there he is at 5 in the lineup. Now, he's there at 5 in the lineup because you want people on base if he is going to hit that ball out of the ballpark. You want it to be a 3-run homer to have it matter more. But I'll tell you what, there would come a certain point for me where I want him lower in the lineup. Now, Council says he only thinks about the lineup in terms of the most number of at-bats, most number of plate appearances. But situationally, my goodness. Like, let's look at that again, because if we're going to look at the lineup again and think about it, I want to know that I've got hitters who can do more around him. And they do. Ian Happ is not a power-only guy. Dansby Swanson is not a power-only guy when he's rolling. He's a guy who does look the opposite field. He's a guy who does look to make contact and drive it the other way. And you have to when Dansby's good. And he's been decent over the last three games or so. But boy, it's a frustrating thing for Morel. All right, I talked a little too much. We'll step away, we'll come back, and I'll give you that ace pitcher, a local ace pitcher who is getting better and trying to get better in a way that a lot of other pitchers do. We'll do that coming up here on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
And he's just, you know, he's got this tough-minded attitude, and I just like the way he goes about it out there. I feel very confident when he's got the ball. Even his, you know, his bad games, rarely do they get away where he just gets hammered. You got to get him out of there after 3 1/3 or something like that. He's always competitive, even when he's not on point. But as you said, for the last, I don't know, 6-7 starts, he's been really locked in.
That is Jim Deshays on with Mully and Hall this week, talking about Justin Steele. You'll hear from Jed Hoyer at the top of the hour. Matt Spiegler with you on Hit and Run. Some incredible text coming in on Johnny Frigo that I gotta share in a minute or two. But first, Justin Steele, just so you know, his last 9 starts, he's got a 1.48 ERA. 1.48 ERA. Opponents are hitting 180 against him in his last 9 starts. The OPS against him is 477. He's been absolutely phenomenal. And our guy Sean Sears caught this. Was this on Marquee, or was it from Cubs Productions over at their website?
Cubs Productions over on YouTube there.
On YouTube. And Matt Romito and everybody over at Cubs Productions does a great, great job. This is, tell people what this is. Is Justin Steele mic'd up?
Yeah, so this is Justin Steele mic'd up for a bullpen session where he's working specifically on his changeup with Tommy Hotovy.
Doing good. I just want to focus on the changeup a little bit more.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't have a ton of feel for my changeup last time out.
Do you think since I was getting that action on my first seam, like it might have, like, maybe mentally, like with my changeup or something?
I think it could have. Hey, what's your process on it right now?
Just throw it over the plate.
Good. Just think that.
Trying not to think too much.
I
I think it's a thing where I like, as I get more feel with it, I start feeling like I can actually manipulate it and stuff rather than just ripping it. How many is that? 29. Last one. Any takers? What have I been at?
Oh, 88.8, 88.9, 89.3. How hard are you gonna try?
Hard.
Ooh. All right, 90.7.
Okay, so you're mic'd up today. I'm going 90.3.
I got 90.6. Guess. I've been 88.89. Last one. What do you think?
91.7. Two in a row! Oh my God! 90.3.
Thank you, brother.
Shit, brother.
Appreciate it.
Let's
go. I mean, that was all I had.
So that's Justin Steele working on the changeup and trying to make himself better. Some cool mic'd up stuff that's been going on around Justin Steele and the Cubs. We like to look at the leaderboards every Sunday morning as, you know, as a reminder of what we used to have to do in terms of the Sunday newspapers. It's all we had, right? It's the only time that you would get a chance to look and say, oh, wait, who's leading MLB in ERA? Justin Steele been great the last 9 starts, but that's not enough to get him towards the top of the ERA pile. Quick, top of your head. Anybody know? Who's leading MLB in ERA? Sean Sears, you know it?
I do not, no. Ranger Suarez?
No, because he's been roughed up a little bit. He's down to number 9 with an ERA of 2.76.
Down to 9?
Yeah.
2.76 is 9?
2.76 is 9. Give me another one.
Ooh, I don't know. It's not our guy Justin Steele, like you just said.
No.
Shoti Imanaga, he's back to 3 now, right?
Yeah, no, it's not. Imanaga's down
is
at 13.
Garrett Crochet?
Nope. Imanaga down at 13, Crochet at 16. The very best in terms of ERA is Reynaldo Lopez of the Atlanta Braves.
I would have never said him.
A 1.88 ERA is the only one under 2. Tarik Skubal of the Detroit Tigers is probably, is he official to start the All-Star game for the American League? Is Skubal with the 2.41
ERA? I feel
like
I saw that pop up today. Yeah, I think he's officially the starter.
So Skubal and Burns and Seth Lugo would be the 3 guys that is among. Skubal, Burns, and Seth Lugo are 2.34 in ERA in all of MLB. Chris Sale not going to play in the All-Star game, but that's a 2.74 ERA, and I think likely to be a Cy Young finalist. He's never won the Cy Young Award, amazingly enough. Sale, I believe, had 6 straight top 5 finishes, or maybe it was 5 out of 6 years. He was top 5 in Cy Young voting as a member of the White Sox. Just an incredible run, an incredible career. And if Sale puts together a little bit more of this, you know, age 30s, dominance and excellence down in Atlanta, if this continues to add to everything he did with the White Sox and everything he did with the Red Sox, including winning a World Series, getting the final out of a World Series, Chris Sale, he's going to need a few more years, but he's starting to put together a Hall of the Very Good case, if not a straight up Hall of Fame case. Wins
right speaks 5 of 7, and then actually 7 straight years of top 6.
7 straight years of top 6. Mm-hmm. Voting in Cy Young.
4 straight years of winning, getting an MVP vote as well, too.
Incredible. Incredible. And it has never won it. And you have to wonder if in the minds of voters, that might end up being a part of their thought process. Looking at the hitters, Aaron Judge continues to lead the world in home runs with 34. And then Shohei Ohtani with his 29th yesterday. He leads the National League. He's second in the bigs with home runs. And number 29 was a big one for Ohtani.
Ohtani drives one to right field. It is gone! Was threatening that corner, and it just stayed fair. The 200th home run of Shohei Ohtani's career.
So Ohtani is the first Japanese-born player to hit 200 home runs. And that came in his 2,848th at bat. So the pace is really picking up for Ohtani's home runs overall in terms of his career, and already at 200. You know who's not at 200 but is really just completely setting the world on fire would be Rhys Hines of the Cincinnati Reds. Holy hell. He has made 6 major league appearances, and he homered twice in that game. He has 8 extra base hits in his first 6 career games, which is just outrageous. He's got 5 homers in his first 6 games. You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of another Red a few years back. Remember Aristides Aquino, who hit the major league stage with an unbelievable hello, an unbelievable arrival? That's one. Trevor Story, I didn't remember this, had 7 in his first 6 games with the Rockies.
Wow.
In 2016. So it's interesting because Aquino didn't end up with much of a career, but Trevor Story certainly did. Rhys Hines has been a highly ranked prospect for a while in the Red system. I mean, they've just got so many kids. But with all the different kids that they have, they are not putting it all together in a way that, I thought they might. So Judge is number 1, Ohtani number 2, Gunnar Henderson number 3 in home runs at 28. The incredible Jose Ramirez with 23 is 5th, just behind Marcell Ozuna. Anthony Santander, another late addition to the All-Star game for the Baltimore Orioles, is right there at 23. Then it's Devers and Josh Naylor, Christian Walker, who dominates the Dodgers, among others, and then Cal Raleigh. Must be nice to have a catcher who switch hits and has 20 home
the
runs.
Big dumper.
Must be nice, man. A catcher who produces. Interesting.
They're allowed to do that?
Yeah, apparently so. Tell me more.
Not here in Chicago.
Not here in Chicago. Good conversation with Aram Layton at the beginning of this hour. He talked about Moises Ballesteros, the Cubs catching prospect who has a terrific bat but may not indeed be catcher friendly. Look, on Parkins and Spiegel during the week, we get a chance to talk to some great people. We talk to Craig Counsell every couple of weeks. We talk to Nico Horner every week. And just this past Friday, we talked to Jed Hoyer. And talking to some people in the business who thought that Jed was really, really good on Friday, shared a lot, really reflective. And I think we caught him at a good moment, coming off the Orioles series with that dominant sweep after a very bad stretch. I think Jed was kind of reflective in an interesting way. We have picked what we think are the best bits of that, and we will bring that to you when we come back here on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel. Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Here's the 2-0, and it's swung on, hit to right by Ballesteros, deep. That is way back, and that is gone. Off the roof of the bandbox, a no-doubter for Moises Ballesteros. Speaking of Cubs prospects, he's gone deep for the second time in 18 games now as an Iowa Cub.
It is Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Aw, Silk Sonic right there? Come on, man. Just made my morning that much better. Sean Sears, it's Matt Spiegel here with you. Let's talk about exceptional young talent in baseball. And if I was talking about exceptional young talent in baseball media, then I might be talking about Aram Layton, who joins us from Just Baseball right now on the Circus Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. But I'm talking about exceptional young talent who actually play the game. No offense, Aram, but thank you so much for the time. Good morning. How are you?
No, I'll take that intro every single day of the week. Thank you so much, and appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, man. So you have an affinity for Moises Ballesteros, the young Cubs catcher now raking at AAA. Tell Cub fans what you think of him, and does it preclude them, should it preclude them from looking for a catcher, potentially even here at the deadline? Bob Nightingale wrote today that Danny Jansen of the Blue Jays is in the Cubs' sights.
You know, it's funny. I love the bat so much because it's an incredible operation. I mean, there's just not a lot of things that people can do in the box that I think Ballesteros can do. Like, he makes it look so easy, despite not really looking like the athlete that you would expect, but he moves so well. He has such a good control of the bat. He has sneaky power, and I don't even think it's sneaky anymore. He can really run into him, and we saw him crush some yesterday, on the stage when they were doing the skills competition. But, I mean, this is a really special bat, but the question is, can he develop behind the dish? I think he's got some room for improvement there, so I think you still look to try to upgrade behind the dish. I think that's still something that you have to kind of operate under the assumption that you still don't have a surefire catcher there. I think what makes Ballesteros so fun is that he is really hard to punch out. He balances hit and power as well as any young hitter in the upper minors. He's so advanced on that side of things, but I still think he's got a long way to go defensively behind the dish.
All right, so you referenced what you were able to see yesterday. Tell people what you saw with Futures Game and Skills Competition as well.
I love the idea of the skills competition. I'm hoping that they adjust that a little bit more in the future so we don't have some of the best power hitters in the minor leagues bunting so much. But they did have that free swinging opportunity and kind of a mini home run derby at the end, which was a blast. Of course, the Futures Game is always awesome. Offense is going to be hard to find, just like the All-Star Game, because you have some of the best arms going in one inning spurts, just overwhelming hitters. But it's just such a fun display of talent across the board, and so many young, just I think toolsy but also polished players. We saw 17 and 18 year olds in that game. Ethan Salas, who's 17 years older, by the time he was already playing high A, now 18 and looking comfortable behind the dish. You had Sebastian Walcott, who's 18 years old, and playing shortstop in that game. So just so much talent, but I love that they extended it a little bit more with these skills competitions, and we got an opportunity to see what these guys can do. And Ballesteros in particular, one of the things was just hitting directionally. Can he go the other way? Can he go to center? Can he go to the pole side? And that's just something that he puts on display in batting practice all the time. The ability to just control the barrel is something that is innate for him and really hard to learn.
Quickie on Ballesteros, where would he play? Little first base? Are they using him? Where would you put him?
That's the challenge with him. I think if it weren't for that question, I think he's a consensus one of the better young prospects in baseball, consensus top 100 guy, and probably even higher than that. But being shorter in stature and not the most mobile, it kind of limits him to this catcher or DH situation. So there's a lot more, I think, emphasis on him developing there behind the dish, because if not, I think you really got to look at a DH role because of the lack of stature and the lack of mobility.
So Futures Game, what did you think of Noah Schultz throwing, 96, 97 with a lot of life on it? He's got a slider. This is the 6'9" lefty in the White Sox system.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing because the thing that stands out with him is the fact that he throws strikes as well as anybody that you'll see in low A and high A. Forget a 6'9" lefty. Usually those are pitchers that are always searching to try to find strikes and searching for the strike zone. And this was the first time where I really saw Schultz kind of battling his command. I don't think it's a big deal because he's not very used to coming out of the bullpen. But, I mean, this is somebody that had gone 6 consecutive outings without walking anybody and has only walked more than 2 batters, I think, once this entire season. It's amazing the way that he can fill up the zone with a fastball, as you mentioned, with that run, and then a slider that he's been landing for a strike at a 71% clip this year, which is absurd considering how much movement it has. We saw that, I think, in that game, and you could see the stuff, but it just seemed like he was a little uncomfortable coming out of the pen there and was battling himself command-wise a bit. Not too worried about that. I'll take the sample size of 14 outings this year where he's only walking opponents at a 5% clip. Unheard of for a 6'9 high school lefty.
Wow. Any other takeaway from the Futures Game for you in terms of a player that you saw that you absolutely love before we get to the draft?
Bubba Chandler's fastball. I got a chance to see it a little while ago, but just again, you get that viewpoint of the Pirates prospect here, who was a football recruit. He could have gone to Clemson to play quarterback. He was hitting a little bit in the early parts of his professional career. Like, this guy can do everything. And you really see the athleticism and the arm speed on the mound. It's 97 to 98, but the characteristics are crazy. He just really spins it, and it just takes off out of his hand. So that fastball was really fun to watch. And then Max Clark of the Tigers, just tools across the board, spraying the ball all over, can absolutely fly, rocket for an arm. It's really a five-tool profile there, and you can see why the Tigers were so excited to grab him. And I know people were surprised to see him go ahead of Wyatt Langford, but I think he's starting to show, you know, why the Tigers were so excited about him.
RM Layton of Just Baseball Media. You can find him on X at RM Layton 8. And we will ask about some prospects that might be available in trade coming up in a little bit. But let's talk about this draft. What is the quality and the quantity in this particular draft from the baseball team's perspectives? Like, are they more excited than usual about this batch or not?
I would say not. And, you know, I haven't been doing this nearly as long as some of the incredible people in this industry, but I could say it's the lightest draft I can remember. And I know, again, people that have been doing this longer than me have kind of shared the same sentiments. But, you know, it's a unique one because at the top, I think there's a lot of really safe, and that's a very relative word when it comes to baseball drafting, but safe bats, you know, but also a lot of players that don't give you a lot of positional value. So you're looking at second base profiles or corner outfield or first base. So it's really come down to diving into the offensive profiles, and then it doesn't help when, I don't know what they did in college baseball this year, but exit velocities were up more than 2 miles per hour across the board. We saw home runs way off the charts this year. So it's a tough year to assess, and it is a very thin class, I think, relative to a lot of years. The feedback I keep getting is a stark drop off after the top 10.
Okay. What are you thinking for the White Sox at 5 in this draft?
They are in this kind of wait and see mode, right? Because I think there's so many contingencies in this top 5 where we still don't know who's going number 1, but Bazzana seems to be the favorite, but J.J. Weatherholt is also a very likely option here, and this is a financially driven decision as well here, so we're kind of waiting for that. Then the domino from there can create a myriad of things, because at 2, it sounds like Condon would be the guy, but you never know what's going to happen there. The Rockies love to go with an arm, but if Condon is somehow there, then that creates a different domino effect, and then another bat is off the board. So I think for the White Sox, you got to have to kind of wait and see how it shakes out. You're hoping that one of those top bats fall to you, but I think at the very worst, and I think the worst case scenario is a runoff of 4 bats, considering, you know, the White Sox probably would prefer that, I would imagine. But okay, runoff of 4 bats, you get the best arm in the class, whether you think that's Hagen Smith or Chase Burns. Sounds like they think it's Burns. Great. You've got the best arm in the class then. So I think it's a win-win either way. And that's not even including the fact that you might be able to go under slot with one of the top high school guys there in a Connor Griffin, who's toolsy as could be, and then a Bryce Rayner, who also is very toolsy and has a great chance to stick it short. They're going to have options there, even in the quote-unquote worst-case scenario where all 4 college bats rattle off. But I think for them, I would love to have a Jack Caglione there. I think that's a guy that's volatile, but you got to love the upside or any of the other
college
guys.
It's a first base bat, though, man. Here in Andrew Vaughn town, we don't love the idea of a first base bat with a top 5 pick.
I know, and I keep seeing those White Sox reactions to that. My counterpoint would be, have you ever seen Andrew Vaughn, even with metal? I think you could give him a BESR badge. You ever see Andrew Vaughn hit a ball 120-plus miles per hour?
No, he did not. But we also see Spencer Torkelson. Is he still in the minors for the Tigers? So, you know.
That's a valid counterpoint as well. So, you know, and that's the tough spot here, because I do think offensively Caglione has as much upside as anybody. But, you know, as I mentioned right off the bat, like, relative is the word when it comes to safe, because Torque was supposed to be the safest of all.
Yes.
So there is that positional aspect, which could pivot them to the high school guys, because Connor Griffin can play a potential gold glove caliber center field or a solid shortstop by all accounts. And then Bryce Rayner has come a long way defensively. Shortstop looks really good there. And of course, both boast plenty of offensive upside. So how risk averse is Chris Getz, or how willing is he to roll the dice here on a high school guy? I think financially that'll be a big part of it, but I know White Sox fans seem to be a little bit traumatized from the first base only profile.
You know, I wonder, Aram, if there's any dudes in this draft, and I'm not necessarily even interested in the specifics of it, of the names, but like guys to get from the draft to the majors quickly. Because I remember Brandon Finnegan did it for the Royals back in 2014. I know there's some position players. Zach Nito and Nolan Chanuel are guys who've gotten there fast. And Nico Horner got there fast out of necessity for the Cubs a few years back. I'll tell you what has spoiled me. You know what sports draft has spoiled me? I'll tell you right now. It's the WNBA, man. Like, it literally felt like 2 weeks after the Final Four, I saw Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese get drafted, and 2 weeks later, I see them playing, and the level of connectivity that brings to the sport is insane. I know it's not a fair comp, you know what I mean? But it's like...
Of course.
But my goodness, I feel spoiled by that draft experience, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that has consistently been the biggest hurdle for Major League Baseball in making this draft relevant. And of course, it's relevant because every very good player outside of the international side, too. Like, if you're a stateside here, you've got to be drafted, usually, unless you're, an incredible story. So, of course, it's relevant, but it seems like, oh, okay, we got to wait and see. You know, we'll see this guy in 4 or 5 years. I do think that's changing a lot because of how good college baseball is. I mean, we're talking about Chase Burns here. The biggest question with him is, will the fastball translate because it got hit so hard at times in college? There was 100, and guys in college had an OPS over 900 against it. Like, that's how far we've come, I think, offensively here in college baseball. And in pitching-wise, too, it's a testament to both. So I think that's why we're seeing the Wyatt Langfords fly up the ranks so quickly. We're seeing, a lot of these other guys the last couple of years. Dylan Cruz already in AAA. That's definitely something that stands out to me. And then on the pitching side, more than ever, I think you're going to see these guys continue to be fast-tracked. One, because, if you're polished in college, no need to waste bullets in the minors. And I look at a Hagen Smith. I think that's a guy that could fly right up. And you remember what the White Sox did with Crochet. Like, if they wanted to do that with Hagen Smith, if a team wanted to do that, his fastball slider combination, I think, plays in a bullpen right away. Obviously, you want to develop him as a pitcher, but as a starting pitcher. But I do think that's something that will work well. And then I look at J.J. Weatherholt, and that is a guy with the right scenario here that could fall to the White Sox. I think that would be a dream. If he doesn't go one, he could kind of slide down there based on, what it sounds like some of these other teams would do. Could be fast-tracked as well with his balance of hit, power, and approach. I would love to see Weatherholt, if I'm a White Sox fan, slide there, because that's a guy that has a chance to play short a little bit more than some of the other guys, but has the makings to fly through the minor leagues.
So, talking to R.M. Layton from Just Baseball, and his latest mock draft is up over at Just Baseball. There was a note in Bob Nightingale's column today that the White Sox, if they were going to trade with the Yankees, that they were insisting on Yankees prize prospect Spencer Jones in a deal for Garrett Crochet. What would you think of that potential return or part of that package for Garrett Crochet if Spencer Jones is a grab?
It's an upside play for sure. I mean, that's a guy that I've liked a lot and have been disappointed in, to be honest. It's early in his professional career, but at the end of the day, like the way he started in spring training, even in this Futures game, there were some spots where he did end up, lining one the other way, but there's some times where he just looks very overwhelmed at the plate. It's long. He's 6'7". There's a lot of things working against him to consistently make contact, but at the same time, he has massive power. He flies. He can play center field. Like, there is so much there that is exciting. But I think if you're trading a Crochet, you've got to get big league pieces back. And there's a chance that Spencer Jones could be an all-star piece for you, but there's also a chance that he doesn't hit enough, to be able to carry his weight at the big league level. So I would want Jones in that deal without a doubt, but I don't think that should mean that you're not getting a couple other high impact pieces as well. But it could be a good opportunity there where you might be buying a little bit lower on a Spencer Jones, considering how much he struck out this year, and maybe a change of scenery helps him. But my concern there is the Yankees have done a really good job of getting their guys right when they have swing and miss issues and developing hitting in that perspective. Mm-hmm. Jason Dominguez is a recent, really strong example of that. You're seeing what Ben Rice is now doing up there at the big league level. Austin Wells has had a lot of success. They have done a great job of getting their guys right, and it makes me a little concerned that Spencer Jones is still floundering the way that he is from a contact perspective, considering their track record of late of, being able to get guys mechanically, right to be able to make more contact.
What is the package that makes sense for Crochet? Like, are we talking about two top hundreds and a 4A guy who you can slot in as a position player and try to find something, and then a lottery pick after that, or a scratch off lottery card of a young pitcher thrown in. Like, have you put a package together, you and Jack?
We've tried, but it is hard because Crochet, I think, is somewhat of an unprecedented trade piece here between the control, between the dominance, but then also with the fact that he has already eclipsed a career high in innings. And you just wonder, you know, how that holds up, because if you're trading for Crochet this year, it's of course a long-term play, but it's also a play of, hey, we want to win right now. We want him to pitch into the postseason for us and hopefully deep into, you know, October. So that's the unique spot here. If you're trading for a Crochet, are you willing to give up a ton and roll the dice on the fact that he is totally pushing, you know, the limits of what we've seen, but it might not be his limits. Nobody knows. And it seems like he's handling it just fine. To answer the question though, I think that's just something you got to sign up and deal with and take that risk. And I think a lot of teams are going to be willing to give up a lot to get him because of what he's able to do. The fact that Lizardo is off the market now with injury, like, he is clearly the best piece there. I think two top 100s is a starting point, but I think you could justify getting a third in there or several top 10 pieces to complement. Like, I do think that this is one of the bigger trade packages you've seen in a while. If he does get moved, one, because the White Sox do have that, you know, that leverage there, where, I mean, they could just taper down his innings in the back half, try to preserve his health, and then either move him in the offseason or move him next year if they wanted to. I think that's risky, obviously, with the way pitchers are unfortunately struggling to stay on the field, but they do technically have that leverage. They don't have to move him. And I think for that reason, you also have an A.J. Preller who, you know, doesn't care about prospects at this point, especially. He's going to come in hot, man, and I think teams are going to have to match that. So I think it's going to be one of the larger packages we've seen, and you know, I think it'll dwarf to a degree that C steal.
In a related story, Yoshinobu Yamamoto has been moved to the 60-day injured list for the Dodgers. Mm. He won't even be available till August 16th at the earliest. Dustin May announced he's having another surgery, so he's done. So boy. The Dodgers are in need. All right, last thing, Aram, is you've been generous with your time. If you were the Cubs and you do end up buying, who would you not give up among their top 100 prospects?
That is a great question.
Because there's, you know, there people have fallen in love with Owen Casey and Matt Shaw and Cade Horton and Kevin Alcantara. A lot of people don't know a ton about Jefferson Rojas. So of those guys, who would you not give up in a trade?
If I had to pick one, it'd probably be Owen Casey at this point. I've always been a huge Owen Casey fan, and I think it's one of those situations where you almost forget that he's been the youngest, you know, one of the youngest players at each stop, and has been aggressively pushed. And he's not typically the type of profile that you aggressively push, right? Like, massive power. The question was, is he going to make enough contact? He's really playing the outfield consistently for the first time ever in his baseball career. Once he went, you know, to the professional ranks, he had not really played that a ton, and handling all of that with grace and being above average hitter at every single stop is pretty impressive. And we're seeing him do it now in AAA. And I had a chance to talk to him, and he said this was the biggest adjustment he has made in his professional career, is just handling this more advanced pitching. And that looks like, you know, a 117 WRC plus and plenty of just on base skills overall throughout the year, and a guy that actually can motor too. I love Matt Shaw. You know, I think he's been a little bit of a disappointment, but he's come on stronger as the years progressed, and it's a guy I'd rather not trade. But at the end of the day, Owen Casey's one that I think you could end up losing sleep over, because if it all works out for him, he's hitting 30 plus, he's getting on base a ton, and the speed all of a sudden could start to translate more into his game. So that's the one guy that I'd be the most nervous parting with if I'm trying to hold on to anybody.
He is Aram Layton. Enjoy the draft, sir, and thanks for the great coverage and the time. Appreciate you.
Thanks so much for having me, always.
You got it. That's Aram Layton from Just Baseball. It is Matt Spiegler with you on 670 The Score. We have a lineup for the Cubs and the Cardinals in the finale of the first half of the season. We will get that to you when we come back. And we've got a few other things. Bruce Levine was singing. That's noteworthy. and gives me an opportunity to talk about a Cubs-related song. We have an emerging ace trying to get better in a way that so many pitchers do as well. Lots to come here before we get to Jed Hoyer in a chunk at the top of the hour on Hit and Run on the Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Hey, bada 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 bada, so we bada. Hey, bada 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 bada, so we bada. Kennedy, 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 so we bada.
On 670, the Score.
Hey, good Saturday morning, Chicago, and yes, it does appear that the Cubs are on their way again, aren't they? Welcome back inside the clubhouse right here on 670 The Score and your free Odyssey app, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios.
They got the hustle. Yeah. They got the muscle. Yeah. The Chicago Cubs are on their way.
I wonder whose idea it was to play that coming in. That's Bruce Levine. I'm David Hall. We're here till 11 o'clock talking baseball.
Hell yeah, Bruce. Never stop. Bruce can sing, man. Did you hear that?
They got the hustle. Yeah. They got the muscle. Yeah. The Chicago Cubs are on their way.
That is outstanding melodic execution by Bruce Levine yesterday on Inside the Clubhouse. I did not know. Bruce, a big music guy, loves rock and roll. But I mean, the singing chops are there. I mean, what am I doing if not utilizing the vocal stylings of Bruce Levine on a future parody song for Parkins and Spiegel? Or perhaps for Hit and Run? How about a little crossover? How about a little collab between Inside the Clubhouse and Hit and Run?
Inside the Hit and Run.
Yeah.
Too many words?
Hit and Clubhouse. I don't know. Yeah, no, we're working on it. But there's got to be there's got to be room for that. And it lets me, Matt Spiegel, here with you on Hit and Run on a Sunday morning, talk to you about Hey, Hey, Holy Mackerel, which is an incredible bit of Cubs lore, written in, I believe it's 1970, or it might have been, I think it was 69, but it was, Hey, Hey is Jack Brickhouse, obviously, Holy Mackerel is Vince Lloyd, and Lou Boudreau used to say, apparently, no doubt about it, when somebody from the Cubs hit a home run. And so the lyrics were written by somebody named I.C. Hogg, and I don't know who that is, I.C.H.A.A.G., I.C. Hagg. I don't know, it sounded weird when I just said it.
This isn't a Simpsons gag or something?
I don't know. But the music was written by Johnny Frigo. Anybody know Johnny Frigo? Google him, folks. A legendary Chicago musician. Johnny Frigo was a brilliant violinist, played violin with Roy Rogers on the old Roy Rogers Show. And Johnny Frigo, an incredible jazz violinist, among other things. He and his buddy, his partner Joe Vito, Chicago musical royalty for decades. They used to have a golf outing, Joe Frigo and Johnny Vito. Or Johnny Frigo and Joe Vito used to have a golf outing. And then after the golf outing, everyone would gather to tell stories, eat food, and play music. And they would invite incredible musicians. And I know this because I was lucky enough to be invited once. I was in my 20s and I was at their golf outing. I sang with Johnny Frigo. I did a couple of gigs with Johnny Frigo. Such good stories, that dude. There's one story I would love to tell you about Roy Rogers and his horse Trigger that I cannot tell you. If you see me out and about, say, Spiegel, what was the story about Johnny Frigo and Trigger? And I will tell you, but I won't do it on the air. And his son, Derek Frigo, was in the band Enough is Enough, which was a big Chicago rock and roll thing. Anyway, I think Hey, Hey, Holy Mackerel is a really cool bit of Chicago ephemera. And I hear Bruce Levine sing it.
They got the hustle. Yeah. They got the muscle. Yeah. The Chicago Cubs are on their way.
And it makes me want to talk about Hey, Hey, Holy Mackerel and my good fortune to know and play music with Johnny Frigo. Anyway, thanks for listening and surviving that segment. If you're like, what the hell is he talking about? What is that song? Why is Spiegel doing this? What the hell is going on? But anyway, that's a really cool bit of Chicago ephemera and Cubs lore. I have a lineup for you for the Cubs and the Cardinals today. Nico Hoerner leads off yet again, 10-game hit streak for Nico. Michael Bush with an 837 OPS. Absolutely killing it is Michael Bush. And playing really good defense at first base, too. Good for him. That dude. So it's Horner, Bush, Suzuki, and Happ. Christopher Morel continues to bat fifth. Dansby Swanson up to six in the lineup. Miles Mastroboni at seven, playing third base. His defense has really been valuable there. He made a couple nice plays last night as well. Tomas Nito is the catcher, and Pete Crow Armstrong in center field. That behind Jameson Taillon. Cliff Floyd on the Marquee Sports Network was talking about Christopher Morel after the game last night. And he had this to say about Chris.
Yeah, I'm not here to pounce on him. No, really not. I think he's better. I think he knows he's better than the average he's putting up. And you're right, Cole. You're right about just the game and the game of adjustments and understanding situations. I mean, he has a one-dimensional swing. And his swing is geared to hit the ball at the ballpark. His gear is for slug. And if you can live with the strikeouts, and I'm talking about not just him, but the team can live with the strikeouts, then Morel will be in his lineup. But when you think about what he's doing defensively, and not that he's played bad at third defensively, but when you think about what's going on in that situation over at third, he's not playing there consistently, and you're starting to strike out in key situations. I'm not saying he's headed to Iowa. I'm not saying he's going to be demoted. What I'm saying is if he doesn't make the adjustments sooner than later, I mean, it's just obvious the game doesn't give you anything. Sure. You have to earn it every single day. That's what the big league is all about, and I'm hoping that he realizes where he should be living, and that's right center. You know, it's hard to stay there because you believe in your mind that the pitch is coming, and you see, you know what, you're gearing up to hit it. But every take and every approach of his at-bats is geared to do one thing, and that's hit the ball at the ballpark to left field. And these pitches at the big level are not going to give you that pitch consistently every single time. They'll make mistakes, hence why he has the homers he has.
Absolutely.
Man, that's great stuff from Cliff, who's been really, really good all season long. And I'm glad that he's working so much and they've got some consistency over there, man. It has helped that show tremendously, in my opinion. But, you know, it's some interesting, a really good little bit of context there. And it ties into some conversation we had in the first segment of the show this morning at 9 o'clock. Every pitch he takes, every count he gets to is geared toward hitting the ball out of the ballpark to left field. And the pitchers are not going to give you a pitch you can do that with. That is really well said from a hitter's perspective and gives me and hopefully you further understanding. Because if you're Kyle Gibson and you're pitching to Morel in the fourth with the bases loaded, and he's gotten himself ahead in the count at 2-1. You now as a pitcher, based on what Cliff just said, you now as a pitcher know that he's still looking to hit the ball out of the ballpark to left. So you give him a pitch you can't do that with. You give him a sweeping slider on the outside part of the plate that looks like, for a second, it might be a fastball that he can hit out or a slider that's going to hang and sit there so he can hit it out. But instead, you give him one that ends up outside, and so he tries to hit it out of the ballpark, and of course he can't. So that makes all the sense in the world, the way that Cliff discussed it right there. It's frustrating, it's unfortunate, but still there he is at five in the lineup. Now, he's there at five in the lineup because you want people on base if he is going to hit that ball out of the ballpark. You want it to be a three-run homer to have it matter more. But I'll tell you what, there would come a certain point for me where I want him lower in the lineup. Now, Council says he only thinks about the lineup in terms of the most number of at-bats, most number of plate appearances. But situationally, my goodness. Like, let's look at that again because if we're going to look at the lineup again and think about it, I want to know that I've got hitters who can do more around him. And they do. Ian Happ is not a power-only guy. Dansby Swanson is not a power-only guy when he's rolling. He's a guy who does look the opposite field. He's a guy who does look to make contact and drive it the other way. And you have to when Dansby's good. And he's been decent over the last three games or so. But boy, it's a frustrating thing for Morel. All right, I talked a little too much. We'll step away, we'll come back, and I'll give you that ace pitcher, a local ace pitcher who is getting better and trying to get better in a way that a lot of other pitchers do. We'll do that coming up here on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
And he's just, you know, he's got this tough-minded attitude, and I just like the way he goes about it out there. I feel very confident when he's got the ball. Even his, you know, his bad games, rarely do they get away where he just gets hammered. You got to get him out of there after three and a third or something like that. He's always competitive, even when he's not on point. But as you said, for the last, I don't know, six, seven starts, he's been really locked in.
That is Jim Deshays on with Mully and Hall this week, talking about Justin Steele. You'll hear from Jed Hoyer at the top of the hour. Matt Spiegler with you on Hit and Run. Some incredible text coming in on Johnny Frigo that I gotta share in a minute or two. But first, Justin Steele, just so you know, his last nine starts, he's got a 1.48 ERA. 1.48 ERA. Opponents are hitting 180 against him in his last nine starts. The OPS against him is 477. He's been absolutely phenomenal. And our guy Sean Sears caught this. Was this on Marquee, or was it from Cubs Productions over at their website?
Cubs Productions over on YouTube there.
On YouTube. And Matt Romito and everybody over at Cubs Productions does a great, great job. This is, tell people what this is. Is Justin Steele mic'd up?
Yeah, so this is Justin Steele mic'd up for a bullpen session where he's working specifically on his changeup with Tommy Hotovy.
Doing good. I just want to focus on the changeup a little bit more.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't have a ton of feel for my changeup last time out.
Do you think since I was getting like that action on my first seam, like it might have like maybe mentally like with my changeup or something?
I think it could have. Hey, what's your process
on it
right now?
Just throw it over the plate.
Good.
Trying not to think too much. I think it's a thing where I like as I get more feel with it, I start feeling like I can actually manipulate it and stuff rather than just ripping it. How many is that?
29.
Last one. Any takers? What have I been at?
Oh, 88.8, 88.9, 89.3. How hard are you going to try?
I'm hard.
Ooh, all right, 90.7. Okay, so you're mic'd up today. I'm going 90.3.
I got 90.6. Guess. I've been 88.89. Last one. What do you think?
91.7. 91.7. Yeah! Two in a row! Oh, my God! 90.3.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Let's go.
I mean, that was all I had.
So that's Justin Steele working on the changeup and trying to make himself better. Some cool mic'd up stuff that's been going on around Justin Steele and the Cubs. We like to look at the leaderboards every Sunday morning as a reminder of what we used to have to do in terms of the Sunday newspapers. It's all we had, right? It's the only time that you would get a chance to look and say, oh, wait, who's leading MLB in ERA? Justin Steele been great the last nine starts, but that's not enough to get him towards the top of the ERA pile. Quick, top of your head. Anybody know who's leading MLB in ERA? Sean Sears, you know it?
I do not, no. Ranger Suarez?
No, because he's been roughed up a little bit. He's down to number nine with an ERA of 2.76.
Down to nine?
Yeah.
2.76 is nine?
2.76 is nine. Give me another one.
Ooh, I don't know. It's not our guy Justin Steele, like you just said.
No.
Shota Imanaga, he's back to three now, right?
Yeah, no, it's not. Imanaga's down
is
at 13. Nope. Imanaga down at 13. Crochet at 16. The very best in terms of ERA is Reynaldo Lopez of the Atlanta Braves.
I would have never said him.
A 1.88 ERA is the only one under two. Tarik Skubal of the Detroit Tigers is probably, is he official to start the All-Star game for the American League? Is Skubal with the 2.41 ERA?
I feel like
ERA.
I saw that pop up today. Yeah, I think he's officially the starter.
So Skubal and Burns and Seth Lugo would be the three guys that is among Scooble Burns and Seth Lugo are 2-3-4 in ERA in all of MLB. Chris Sale not going to play in the All-Star game, but that's a 2.74 ERA, and I think likely to be a Cy Young finalist. He's never won the Cy Young Award, amazingly enough. Sale, I believe, had six straight top five finishes, or maybe it was 5 out of 6 years. He was top five in Cy Young voting as a member of the White Sox. Just an incredible run, an incredible career. And if Sale puts together a little bit more of this, you know, age 30s dominance and excellence down in Atlanta, if this continues to add to everything he did with the White Sox and everything he did with the Red Sox, including winning a World Series, getting the final out of a World Series, Chris Sale, he's going to need a few more years, but he's starting to put together a Hall of the Very Good case, if not a straight up Hall of Fame case. Wins
right speaks 5-7, and then actually 7 straight years of top six.
7 straight years of top six voting in Cy Young.
4 straight years winning, getting an MVP vote as well too.
Incredible, incredible, and it has never won it. And you have to wonder if in the minds of voters that might end up being a part of their thought process. Looking at the hitters, Aaron Judge continues to lead the world in home runs with 34. And then Shohei Ohtani with his 29th yesterday. He leads the National League. He's second in the bigs with home runs. And number 29 was a big one for Ohtani.
Ohtani drives one to right field. It is gone! Was threatening that corner. And it just stayed fair, the 200th home run of Shohei Ohtani's career.
So Ohtani is the first Japanese-born player to hit 200 home runs, and that came in his 2,848th at-bat. So the pace is really picking up for Ohtani's home runs overall in terms of his career, and already at 200. You know who's not at 200, but is really just completely setting the world on fire would be Rhys Hines of the Cincinnati Reds. Holy hell. He has made 6 major league appearances, and he homered twice in that game. He has 8 extra base hits in his first 6 career games, which is just outrageous. He's got 5 homers in his first 6 games. You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of another Red a few years back. Remember Aristides Aquino, who hit the major league stage with an unbelievable hello, an unbelievable arrival? That's one. Trevor Story, I didn't remember this, had 7 in his first 6 games with the Rockies.
Wow.
In 2016. So it's interesting because Aquino didn't end up with much of a career, but Trevor Story certainly did. Rhys Hines has been a highly ranked prospect for a while in the Red system. I mean, they've just got so many kids. But with all the different kids that they have, they are not putting it all together in a way that, I thought they might. So Judge is number 1, Ohtani number 2, Gunnar Henderson number 3 in home runs at 28. The incredible Jose Ramirez with 23 is 5th, just behind Marcell Ozuna. Anthony Santander, another late addition to the All-Star game for the Baltimore Orioles, is right there at 23. Then it's Devers and Josh Naylor, Christian Walker, who dominates the Dodgers, among others. And then Cal Raleigh. Must be nice to have a catcher who switch hits and has 20 home runs.
Big dumper.
Must be nice, man. A catcher who produces. Interesting.
They're allowed to do that?
Yeah, apparently so. Tell me more.
Not here in Chicago.
Not here in Chicago. Good conversation with Aram Layton at the beginning of this hour. He talked about Moises Ballesteros, the Cubs catching prospect who has a terrific bat but may not indeed be catcher friendly. Look, on Parkins and Spiegel during the week, we get a chance to talk to some great people. We talk to Craig Council every couple of weeks. We talk to Nico Horner every week. And just this past Friday, we talked to Jed Hoyer. And talking to some people in the business who thought that Jed was really, really good on Friday, shared a lot, really reflective. And I think we caught him at a good moment, coming off the Orioles series with that dominant sweep after a very bad stretch. I think Jed was kind of reflective in an interesting way. We have picked what we think are the best bits of that, and we will bring that to you when we come back here on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.